Pac-12 football. This is the Pac-12 Insider here on ESPN 700. The Pac-12 Insider is presented by Summit Foot and Ankle, with 9 Utah locations to serve you. Now for the latest on Pac-12 football, here's the Pac-12 Insider on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Time to talk some Pac-12 football. Obviously, Utah, Oregon State here Saturday. Man will be calling it for the Pac-12 Network. We'll be joining his buddy Ted Robinson. As Yogi Roth, he is a football analyst. He is an author. He is a filmmaker. He is a man about town. And, of course, he's a guy that loves telling stories. So what is the story, Yogi Roth, of the first month of the Pac-12 season for you?
Well, I think it's at the nation because of what this league did in the non-conference schedule, is paying attention to the league. Usually, unfortunately, the last couple of years, we've been talking about this league in our, you know, West Coast bubble for the most part, right, from Colorado, Utah, all the way out here to California. But now you're hearing people in Bristol talk about it, people in the South talk about this league. And I love that, just for a guy who's been in this league for almost 20 years now. I'm sure you guys do as well, regardless of that week one loss to Florida. So I think that's probably the biggest one. And then you look at 5 teams in the top 15, or 4 teams in the top 15 from the AP poll. So I think that doesn't really happen. It needs to happen.
It's nice to see, really and truly it is. And by the way, how are you?
I'm good, bro. I'm good. It's so excited to talk to you. I was just listening to you and Brent Keithy. Love that interview between the two of you. And just sent it off to our crew right before you guys called. So I'm doing well. I can't wait to get out to Salt Lake. I haven't been there in a while. And I know it's going to be another incredible environment. Sell out. We got a great game, start time, the whole 9 yards. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, that was tough. I was so happy Brant said he would do it because he's a stand-up guy. But it was tough. You could hear it in his voice, especially early on in the interview. The difficulty just days removed from learning his season was done and the ACL was torn. But I was really happy and pleased that he did the interview yesterday. What did you take away from it?
One, I think he's really thoughtful. You know, I think that was the thing that stood out to me, just as an individual, right? He's obviously patient in terms of focusing on what he needs to focus on now, which was finding the surgeon, figuring out the time and place, getting the swelling down. But I just love your interaction, right? You put everybody, including myself, at ease whenever we talk, and I love how you've continually had players on consistently, whether it's Britton or Cam or Brant. So I just kind of enjoyed it, you know. And then at the end, I love that he didn't rush to judgment, because I think it'd be easy to say, all right, I'm out, I'm leaving to the league. Like, he was like, look, let me just focus on getting healthy. You know, he's gonna have so much time while he's rehabbing, I'm sure, to think about his future. And I don't know, that stood out to me as well.
Were you and Ted in Corvallis last weekend?
Oh yeah. We had the Trojans. It was an awesome, you know, it was as crazy of an environment as I've ever seen calling a game. I mean, it was off the charts, bro.
So I was obviously getting ready. I had my eye on it a little bit, but getting ready to call the ASU game. So I'm curious from your perspective, in a weird environment with half the stadium under construction and the crowd and research can be fun at night, and you've been up there for those games before. I'm wondering, was that more about offensive ineptness or slowdown from USC, or has the Oregon State defense gotten that much better? Was it a one-off? Was it a good game plan? I knew Oregon State would be in the game. It would be a close game. I just didn't expect 17 points from USC. So from your perspective, for those that haven't watched the entire game, what transpired last weekend?
Yeah, it's a combination of all those things. You know, Caleb didn't have his fastball in terms of Caleb Williams, USC starting quarterback. You know, he was throwing, and his feet weren't set a lot. He was dirting some of the balls. I mean, he just wasn't as efficient and accurate as he is. And I still think he's an elite player in the country. Two, the Oregon State game plan, you know, in my time calling games, from what I heard on Friday in the coaches' meetings to what I saw Saturday, it was the most accurate depiction of what they thought would happen and what did happen from Trent Bray, their defensive coordinator. They changed the picture so late on USC, because a lot of times Caleb Williams will look to the sideline to get confirmation of a play or an audible of a play. And their whole scheme, and if you go back and listen to the game, I think I even said in the broadcast, like, I don't mean to be repetitive, but this is exactly what they're doing. They're just changing the picture late, and they force USC to burn all 3 timeouts in the first half. to have delay game penalties because of how late they were changing the shell. You know, traditionally they like playing a lot of man coverage, but you watch the Stanford USC game and you're like, all right, we're not going to play man against these guys. I mean, Jordan Addison, Mario Williams, and the weapons they have are, you know, better than anybody I think in America. So they played a ton of zone coverage where they were passing things off, and it forced Caleb to hesitate. It forced him to work through his progression, and it allowed Oregon State success on defense. And then I think on the flip side, SC's defense is usually the thing that gets criticized the most because teams have been able to run the football. And Oregon State was able to run it with efficiency against them, but they weren't able to do anything consistently. And I think Alex Grinch as well had an incredible game plan of changing up his stunts, what the defensive front was looking like, what the shell was looking like. And then they're so opportunistic, and you add in Eric Gentry, who is the most unique player in our league at 6'6" with a 7'1" wingspan and middle linebacker. He just makes life really hard in between the hashes. And he did, you know, he had a pick, he caused another one. It was just really talented. So I think both coordinators on the defensive side had awesome game plans. And you know that Brian Lindgren and Lincoln Riley are they're elite offensive minds. So they were trying to change and adjust. So it was just a great game, bro. Like, it wasn't sloppy. Nobody imploded. It wasn't total domination. It was just, like, I could say this, like, it might have been the most unique game I've ever called it with Ted. You know, we've been doing it, I think, 8 years now together. And the football was fantastic on every front in terms of how guys made plays, when guys elevated the schemes. And, you know, you had a couple penalties that made things dramatic where a big run got called back, or you had the Nealon nudge where he kind of ran into his quarterback on 4th and 6 to get the first down. Like, he just had it all. Add in standing room only and USC's last time seemingly in Corvallis. Like, it was just a cool night.
I'm not sure the Nealon nudge is going to quite catch on like the Bush push did, but it's a good 2.0 version for those that don't remember. What was that, 2005? Was that it? 2005 season in South Bend, right? You would have been on the sideline that day.
Yeah, I was up in the booth. I got so excited when we completed the 4th and 9 slant and go to Dwayne Jarrett that I jumped in the air and punched a hole in the little mini TV that they had in the Notre Dame press box and broke it. And the drive was still going. So it was like TV smashed everywhere. Everybody's going crazy. And we got to like recalibrate because now it's 1st and goal with like whatever it was, 30 seconds left or something.
So you pulled a Ken Dorsey before Ken Dorsey.
Yeah. But mine was a jubilation. Mine was like, go, go, go. But papers were everywhere. It was chaotic as I go back to that moment. But yeah, it was cool. Like, I do think that for that game, you know, for SC, look, it wasn't pretty, but I don't think it was one of those where, man, they played so ugly and are lucky to get a win. I think it was just a hell of a game. You know, and Oregon State, they can come in and beat Utah for the second straight year. You know, like, it wouldn't surprise me if that was the outcome. I think it'll be another great game. And for USC, I think they're going to lean on this past weekend when they come to Salt Lake City in a couple weeks, because it's, you know, another really challenging road game, and it's not going to be half a stadium. You know, it'll be just as crazy and loud and chaotic. So they're going to lean on that, and I'm sure they'll make their adjustments when they go on the road. So a lot, I think, that will lean back on that, from the Nealon nudge and entertainment-wise to the exo side of it, that I think people will be talking about over the next couple of weeks, at least around the trunk.
All right, one more SC thing that I want to move on to a few other things around the league. Yogi Roth with us here on the Bill Riley Show today. What is it that SC does best right now, Yogi, and what is it that they still need a lot of work on?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think how do you argue against the turnovers, right? 14 turnovers they've created. They haven't given the ball up once. And they can create explosive plays. Like, that combination, you could look at any stat at any level. You win explosives, you win turnovers. I think last year, every team who did that in conference play won the game. And I'd imagine that bears out. I think there was like 3 games among teams in the top 25 last year where they lost when they won both of those categories. So that's the best thing they're doing. You know, they can create explosives. Like, so you know, you look at that game, and it was like, wow, the Beavs are hanging and hanging and hanging, and they hadn't given up a big one, and then boom, the whole shot to win the game for Jordan Addison. Right, like, that's what they can do. And then they create those turnovers. So that's the thing they're doing best. I think the biggest thing they can work on right now, like 2 weeks ago, I would have said the interior defensive tackles, but they moved guys like Tuli Polotu all over that defensive line. Guys elevated. They're playing so hard. You know, their effort's off the hook. I'd say it's going to be, you know, the changing of scheme at the line of scrimmage by the defenses, because that's what stood out so much, right? It just caused them to get out of any sort of rhythm. You know, like the only times they were really having a lot of success on offense is when they had a first down and then boom, they can go tempo. And I don't think that you can live and die with that as like the only way you're successful offensively. And I don't think that's who USC is. I just think that's how the game ended up panning out. The only time they really found a lot of success was piggybacking off of big plays. I think for them now, they've got to be able to line up and say, okay, Utah, you're going to change the picture. Arizona State, you're going to change the picture. How are we just going to execute? And I think that starts everywhere, whether it's up front, whether it's Caleb setting his feet, whether it's the receivers. There's a bunch of areas where they could grow there. But, man, their resiliency is real. I think when you look at the rest of the country, you know, they're more impressive than teams that are even ranked higher than them. You know, when I look at, like, Clemson, for instance. But I also think that in this league, I could put Washington at six in the country and I wouldn't flinch the way that they played. Utah, Oregon, like, I think everybody could beat each other when you look at the four teams that are ranked as high as they are right now within our league.
I'm glad you mentioned Washington, because the Friday night game at the Rose Bowl intrigues me a lot, because I think Washington's really good, though the win against Michigan State doesn't look quite as good now. He's just because Michigan State's lost back-to-back weeks, but they've played, Washington's played really, really well. Yogi, I don't know what to make of UCLA after a month, because they really haven't played anybody and they haven't looked particularly great, you know, even at home against, say South Alabama. So to me, Friday night is a game I'm really intrigued in to see both these teams.
Yeah, look, I thought UCLA would have a chance this year to, you know, play Utah in the title game, you know, now that you have two teams from the old South, for instance. But you're right, they haven't looked like we thought they would look, specifically on defense. They've got to stop the run. You know, I called the game against South Alabama, who had 15 Power 5 transfers, including their running back from Florida State and all O-linemen from all throughout the SEC. But still, like, they struggled stopping the run. And I think for UW, what they've done all year and what has stood out to me is it's as though they're running downhill the whole game on their opponent. It's like their foot is on the gas and they are just going hard and throwing hate. It's like every time they touch the ball, they think they could score, whether it's a shot from Michael Penix Jr. to one of his wideouts, whether it's a screen to Wayne Taulupapa, who's playing at an all-conference level, the running back transfer from Virginia. And then even defensively, 8 sacks last week. Braylon Trice off the edge is playing at an all-conference level, and they still have PTF, still Seville Small. Like, they've got some talent there, which we thought that would be their one weakness this year, would be the defensive front, after losing one of their top starters went to Oregon, who's starting for them now, for instance. And they've really retooled it. So I'm with you. I don't know what to make of UCLA. And then I look at this game, they may be out multiple defensive linemen, interior defensive linemen. And we all know in this league, Utah has some depth there, but there aren't many teams that have a bunch of depth on the interior defensive front in the Pac-12, let alone anywhere outside of the top five in the country in college football. So how can they stop the run? I do want to see Chip Kelly, though, in this offense scheme up UW. You know, UW's been without a couple guys in the secondary. We'll see what happens on Friday night if they can come back. I like the playmakers UCLA has. Jake Bobo has come on over the last 2 weeks because they've needed him. And I think to the point that Kyle made from Florida game to week two, I mean, for Chip Kelly from South Alabama, which was kind of like their first pseudo test because the first 2 weeks they just rolled, to Colorado last week, they looked much more improved. And I know what Colorado is. But I just think that they got that game where, like, they had to tackle, they had to be really physical, and now we'll see. And this should be, you know, the best football that they play all season long. It'll clearly be their biggest test. And I don't really know which way it'll go. I think it's going to tell us a lot about both of the teams and for Washington if they're as real as we think. Because if you took their resume and said, you know what, take away the offseason from last year, like, take away guys going to the portal and, you know, the hectic, you know, chaotic elements that were around Jimmy Lake and his firing, you could say they're playing as well or better than USC. It should be number six in America as an undefeated team, right? Because that's kind of where Michigan State was, right? When you look at them after a couple wins in the season, they were number 11, and we've seen what's happened the last 2 weeks. So I still don't think we know enough to give any credence to real rankings around UW, but I'm a believer, and I'm looking forward to seeing how this one shakes out Friday night.
Couple more minutes here with Yogi. He and Ted Robinson will be in town Saturday for the Pac-12 Network broadcast, just down the hall from us on the radio side of things. So Utah now 3-1, heading into their big month. This is the big month, Yogi. You've got Oregon State, you've got UCLA on the road, you've got USC at home, then you've got that trip to the Palouse. So this is a big month for Utah. They kind of rounded into form in October last year as well. So I'm curious, as you kind of scout this, get ready for this, your view kind of after a month on Kyle's team.
Yeah, well, I'll say the biggest thing that has stood out to me is the development of the defensive front seven. You know, we all saw the Florida game, and it's just hard when you're playing a bunch of new guys, especially an inside backer, Orlando Martin. You know, the skill set that he has. But when I look at the Florida game, and I think it was 20 missed tackles, at least TFF had him, I think, four. And then this past weekend and every week since, you're in the single digits, in the low single digits of missed tackles, and you're just seeing the defensive front's evolution. It's awesome to watch, and whether it's the scheme, guys playing fast, guys coming off the edge, Corinne Reed, Gabe Reed. I mean, it jumped off to me. And that's going to be the story of the game, I think, for us going into it. Of Oregon State, for them to win, they need to run the football instead of the play-action game. And I don't know if they'll be able to. I love their O-line, but this is Utah's strength of this defense right now that really has shown up for me. We know what they are on the back end. So to your point, like, they're really coming together. It sounds like Mo Diabate might come back for this weekend game. You probably know more than me as we sit here on a Wednesday, but it seems like he might. So now they'll get to full strength. And to your point, I think they'll be playing their best ball on defense. Where I want to see them is offensively in the passing game. You know, their offensive line, I think that has grown as well over the course of the last couple of weeks. But you're Quinton Jackson, I called Ted yesterday. I said, hey, bro, this guy looks like a real running back. Like, when you look at that fourth quarter and those late snaps that he took, and you're watching him run inside zone, and you're saying, whoa, this guy looks like he's playing running back for his entire life. So that's kind of cool just to see how they shake that up with the depth they have. But I still want to know, and I know that the receivers talk about it a lot, but I think it's fair of, like, who's going to be the got-to-have-it guy? You know, it was Brant Keithy. Like, who's the guy now? Like, I don't know who I'm going to circle on a third down and say, they're probably going to go to this guy, because I haven't seen enough. I haven't seen, you know, dominant performances of the line of scrimmage. I've seen everybody flash. Everybody's had their moments. But that's the question of the passing game, because I think you're going to need that in this league. You're going to have to be able to score. They were so explosive last year. We've seen them be explosive, of course, in their recent games. We saw it in the first game against Florida, but now with Brant out for the year, I do wonder, like, how big of a loss is that? Because not only was he talented, but he was the kind of go-to guy offensively in the passing game. So I'm curious to see, you know, who becomes that. Because there's a lot of time, and to your point, there's a lot of games where somebody's going to have to make those plays.
Well, Vele's emerged the last couple of weeks. Enos had some drops last week. You played wide receiver. You've coached quarterbacks. How does that happen? We've heard coaches say, hey, these guys have to get open and demand the football. How's that dynamic work, Yogi? Because you've done both sides of this, on the coaching side and the playing side. How does a wide receiver both get open and demand the football so they get more touches?
Yeah, well, to me, it's like, I always say, like, can you make the play at the moment of truth? And that's what I want to see from these receivers, right? So, and that's why I kind of call it a got-to-have-it guy, where it's third and eight, and whether it's Solomon Enos, to your point, or Devon Vele, or maybe it's Money Parks, you know, they've got guys that can play. But who's going to go up and go win the one-on-one battle? Go win the 50-50 ball? Go extend technically when you're coming back to the ball on a hook route and grab it and tuck it away from pressure? Like, those are the little things that I think – give the receiver dramatic confidence, give the quarterback dramatic confidence. They're like, okay, I'm coming backside to you. You're my third read, and boom, it's a curl route. It's third and nine. You get your depth to 12, and away we go. You catch it, you tackle, but it's first down. Like, that's what Brant Keithy did, right? Whether he was the first in the progression or the third in the progression. And that's to me, the thing. You know, like, who can make those plays consistently? So much so that the defense is, I got to take that guy away. Like, you're going to see Oregon State, or I'm curious to see Oregon State, like, do they play a version of man coverage? Do they feel as though they can play these guys man coverage? Right. Last week we saw, I don't think we saw one snap of man. You know, it was pretty much zone all game long for obvious reasons against the weapons that he has. What do they do in this game? Knowing that they got to stop the run, knowing that they got to stop the zone read. I don't know. You know, that'll be the fun part that we figure out early on in this ball game. But for those wideouts of Utah, to me, it's just coming out and playing with extreme confidence. And I think we've seen that from them this year. To your point, I just think that nobody's had to make a play in a game when you're the guy. Because now, you know, Brant's always been there, right? And I think it's fair to say that when it was a guy to have it down, most of the time it was designed to get the ball to him. So when it's a tight game, that's when those guys have to elevate. And I can't wait. Like, I love Solomon Enos coming out of high school, coming out of Phoenix. I grew up watching his dad. You know, I remember Devon Vele a couple years ago. I was with Jeff Rudy at practice, and he goes, "That's the guy. He's a walk-on. That's the guy." And now he's becoming the guy. So I look forward to that, because that's the fun part of the position, is the opportunity presents itself. Receivers, as we know, are an extremely confident group. Someone will rise up to it. I'm really intrigued to see which one will be that guy. And maybe it'll be by committee. We've seen that before in college football with teams that take a run at a title. So I don't know. We'll see how it shakes out, but they'll be challenged. They will be challenged by what I think is, you know, the best secondary in the proverbial North. And I think we're going to see the two best secondaries in the league on Saturday afternoon at Rice-Eccles Stadium.
Well, he was Tyler Palko's guy back in the day. Now he's Ted Robinson's guy and my guy from time to time as well. He'll be on the call Saturday on the Pac-12 Network. I'm going to reach out to you a little later. I got a couple of tidbits for you that you'll I think you'll enjoy. But thanks for coming on. By the way, plug the book, and how are the book sales going?
Book sales are going really well. Thanks for asking. 5-star QB. I'm excited. I'm going to bring a couple of copies to Salt Lake for Cam and Coach Whittingham, because they're both in the book. Again, it's a story about quarterbacks and everything they go through in recruiting and their advice to others going through it. So I think you'll learn a lot about Cam in it. You'll learn a lot about Kyle's lens on advice around the position. And we just dropped a journal for, if you're like a football parent or a parent of an athlete, and I think sometimes we give our kids journals and we're like, hey, write your thoughts. And kids look at it and they're like, what do I do on these blank pieces of paper? Well, we created one that prompts you on your physical health, your mental health, the thoughts that you may have in between your years. And we just dropped that, and it's really cool. I just picked mine up last night, and I gave it to a 7-year-old, and he's already scribbling in it. So you could be 17, you could be 7, you could be 27, whatever. But I'm really proud about that, to, you know, help curate the athletic, you know, discussion around what goes on between our ears. I mean, here we are. It's, you know, not to be a downer, but it's, you know, National Suicide Awareness Month, right? And, yep. You know, you talk about this with athletes, like, it's a real thing in mental health. And, you know, I'll say this, through a month of the season, I've talked to more athletes on campus around mental health than I have about X's and O's. So I think we got to just keep pouring in. That's what I love about what you're doing with Brand, like giving guys and athletes outlets to talk about whatever they're going through, because there's a lot happening. So I think this journal is just another tool for somebody to go through their journey with.
Yoke, thanks. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it, brother.